entertaining new possibilities.
The Palace Theater, your palace, your place.
Shows for the whole family.
Waterbury Palace, your palace, your place. Waterbury Palace Theater, your palace, your place.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I'm Sherry Marcucci, and I'm so happy that I got here safely, actually, this morning. It's crazy out there, but I'm happy to be here with another edition of Your Palace, Your Place, brought to you by the Palace Theater right here in Waterbury, Connecticut. And if you have not been to the Palace Theater, I would invite you to come and explore. There are so many ways to experience the Palace. It's just a wonderful, wonderful venue right in downtown Waterbury. And today I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that are coming up. And I would be remiss if I didn't say one thing right at the top of this show. Our inaugural relaunch show 2 weeks ago, we had on as a guest Nathaniel Zembrowski. And for those who don't know, I've watched Nathaniel grow up from, you know, babyhood to a wonderful young adult, a 20-year-old who has just got so much talent in his baby finger. Anyway, he is with the show Hairspray that opened last night at the Palace Theater. And he is in the orchestra, but he is the assistant musical director. And last night, he got to conduct the orchestra to the very appreciative hometown crowd. So, Nathaniel, bravo, bravo. I'm just seeing so many raves on Facebook. Everybody was so excited that you were there and you got a chance to conduct. So, congratulations to all. And if you are still thinking, ooh, I want to see Hairspray, I love that show, love to see it again, or never saw it, you still got a chance because there are tickets available for today's matinee, which is at 1 p.m., or tomorrow evening's performance at 7:30. So give the box office a call, 203-346-2000, or go to our website, palacetherct.org, and you can secure some tickets. You will be happy you did. And I do want to just remind you that you're listening to Your Palace, Your Place on 1320 WATR AM and also 97.7 FM. So we have quite a reach, which is great because the Palace Theater is a venue that's right in the center of Connecticut. So from any which direction, we're a short ride away, and it's a gem, a real gem. Now, I have to start our show this morning a gentleman who is going to talk about his second act. Well, what's second act? Second act is a storytelling series that I curate for the Palace Theater. And it is a delightful series where people from all walks of life tell their personal and oftentimes intimate stories about their second act of life, the second chapter, if you will. And the gentleman that's going to join us momentarily, he was recommended to me last year, over a year ago, actually, by one of my colleagues at the Palace. And I reached out to him because he had an impressive resume, and I didn't hear back from him. And I thought, well, that's odd. But I went on and filled our series for this year. Well, as I say, timing is everything. And a confluence of events in a person I had lined up for this year wasn't able to do it after all. So I reached out again to Bobby Ramos, who's on the line, and I said, I never heard back from you, but I really would like to talk to you about the possibility of doing a second act here at the Palace Theater. Well, Bobby is not a real emailer, but he's a great texter. So anyway, I guess I ended up in spam. And long story short, I called him and was able to connect with him. So this morning on the line, waiting to talk to us a little bit about what his presentation will be, is Bobby Ramos. Bobby, welcome to Your Palace, Your Place.
Good morning, Sherry. How you doing? It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh,
and before we get started, I want to give a personal congratulation. That's quite a story about Nathaniel, so I want to congratulate Nathaniel.
Oh, you're a dog. Well, that's wonderful. You know, Nathaniel's a great young man, and I can't wait to see all the things he's going to accomplish in life. But you have had quite a life, and I want to talk a little bit about, and by the way, listeners, Bobby Ramos is a veteran of radio. He's had a talk show on another station down in Bridgeport, which I won't name, but you can probably guess. He's had a show for over 25 years, Bobby?
Yes.
Okay, so he's definitely familiar and comfortable with this medium. But, Bobby, I have to say that as I read through the bullets on your resume, okay, this is what captured my attention. First of all, as a professional career, you were a 27-year you had a 27-year police career, and you were a SWAT negotiator in that role. You also, as I mentioned, have been a radio host, not only for the station in Bridgeport, but also ESPN Radio. And in that role, you've interviewed, you know, the elites, athletes, authors, entertainers. You and I talked about that. And you also, which is timely, because this week we celebrated Martin Luther King, you were the 2017 State of Connecticut Martin Luther King Awardee Man of the Year. And there's more here, ladies and gentlemen. There's a lot more. But right now, I wanna talk a little bit about what your role as a policeman, and particularly a SWAT negotiator, what that must have been like. And, you know, in the environment we live in today, and, you know, it's no secret that, you know, police have taken a lot of flack. And I'm not going to get into a political discourse, but as a human being, how do you think about that. How does that affect you having played that role?
You know, or lived that role, I should say. You know, you talked about all the people people ask me that all the time. Who's the one person that got away? Because I've interviewed Ali and Tyson and you know, Cochran and Shaq and Kobe, everybody under the sun. But I've added to the list, I said, the one who got away is Sherry Marcucci. So I have to get you one day, because you'll be the one that got away so far. But
you're funny.
And I also want to thank Sherry, because she's done a lot of work with me over these last few months, getting me to get over my shyness. So Sherry, I want to thank you for that also.
Oh, you know, Bobby, anytime, my bill will be in the mail. But I have to tell you, this man is not shy, for sure. And the one thing I wanted to mention, and then I'll let you do the talking. You have an interesting quote that we have on our website, actually, and this really spoke volumes about you. Adversity truly introduces a man to himself. Let every obstacle be an opportunity to show the world just how blessed and truly talented you truly are. I am an ordinary man who is living an extraordinary life.
Yeah.
Can you explain, talk about that a little bit?
That's 100% it. You know, people have said, oh my goodness, you've been on WFAN, ESPN, you're the most decorated cop, and all this kind of stuff. What does that mean to you? It means nothing to me except for the fact that I'm Paul and Doris's baby boy. Everything starts with my parents. I don't get caught up in what I've done, because the way I've always looked at it, there's more to do. The old saying, to whomever much is given, much is required, I definitely believe in that.
So absolutely.
I don't believe in stopping and you know, thinking about all that I've done up to date and all that kind of stuff. No, there's things I want to accomplish. There's things I got to do. There's still people that I want to assist and help in any way I can. So that's just the way I look at everything. That's the way I looked at police work. You mentioned police work. Let me tell you, I found it in my 27 years, and I worked the 27 years in our toughest neighborhood, I found it easy. And once again, that stems from my parents, because I learned very early how you treat people is how you're going to get treated back for the most part.
That is such an important life lesson. And I think today especially, that needs to be really reinforced, you know, among youth, you know, the way children are raised, because absolutely. You know, have you ever done, and I'm sure you have, because I can tell you're this kind of guy, you know, you're just walking down the street and you just put a big smile on your face and people are coming at you and you could see the look of like, oh, and then they respond with that big smile right back. And I think that's what's kind of missing today in many.
It's missing a lot.
missing a lot. And as a policeman, I'm sure, you know, you got your share of, you know, backlash and disrespect and things of that nature. And yet you still have this ebullient personality. You have this, you know, no, I'm going to treat you the way I want to be treated.
Right. And realistically, what you just said. No, I didn't go through a lot of disrespect because I gave people respect from the start.
Uh-huh.
And my name usually preceded me before I walked into people's houses. I mean, everybody in the neighborhood knew me. And I was the old-fashioned cop where a lot of our youth today, they're not afraid of getting arrested. It's almost a badge of honor. They're not afraid of getting arrested.
Mm.
What they didn't like or they couldn't deal with was to go home to mom, pops, grandma, grandpa, and say, get hit with, what'd you make Officer Ramos come here for? What'd you do? That was a big deal.
Sure.
That was a big deal. That was an old school way. It was, listen, you can't say he was prejudiced. You can't say he was a knucklehead. You can't say he was this and that. I know what you're about. What'd you do to make Officer Ramos come to this house?
Wow.
That made it so, I didn't really have to, as far as local people in my neighborhood for that 27 years, I didn't really have to chase too many people. There may have been people from other cities once in a while, but from my own city, I didn't have to chase people because people knew. I knew where you lived. I know your parents. I know your grandmother.
Right.
Right. People would stop running or pull over. Okay, Officer Ramos, I'm sorry. You got me. It was that kind of stuff. It was that kind of old school respect. Now, to have that, it starts from day one. You don't get that just by showing up one day and smiling at somebody.
Right, right.
It's a
and
journey.
That's kind of like that it's the community policing. I know here in Waterbury, that's, you know, we're really working hard with our police department is working hard to, you know, let themselves be known in the neighborhoods they're serving in. And that you're right, that makes a difference because you have to build up that trust and respect. And, you know, like you said, nobody wants to see you showing up at their doorstep saying your son XYZ or your grandson or whatever. So I want to ask you about the SWAT negotiation for a minute. If you would share, you know, a time when you were in one of those situations that you can share without obviously names or anything, but that just, you know, either had you stopped in your tracks or like, how's this going to end up and how you dealt with that?
You know, first of all, I got a couple things real quick. My mother told me I wasn't going to be good at it because you're going to be like, listen, either poop or get off the pot because I got a game to go through tonight. So that was the first thing. My mother was a smart butt sometimes. And that was the first thing she told me as a joke. Now, I went to two schools. One guy was the number one guy. Matter of fact, A&E did a special on him, a two-hour special. He's the one who did the Lufthansa hike. I learned more from him than I did in my FBI training. But even with the FBI training, one of the guys said, because it was a class of about maybe 25 of us. And he said, Bobby, you're going to have a problem because your voice is too controlling. Your voice is too deep. And two female cops behind me they were laughing. So he pulled the whole school teacher thing and said, you want to share that with the class? What are you laughing about? And they were like, no, it's okay. And he just said, no, tell us what you found so funny. And one of them said, okay, well, we were saying that we could listen to him talk all night, no matter what he talked about. So that worked out pretty good. And you basically, no matter what you're doing in life, you want to use what you got.
Absolutely.
When you mentioned the SWAT negotiator and me being on the radio, there were so many times I'm dealing with people and they're like, hey, you're the cop on the radio. You know, I'm taking prisoners to jail in the morning, me and my partner, Roger, and we're talking, and everybody's handcuffed in the back of the van. We're taking them to court in the morning, and a guy goes, hey, I know you. I listen to you. You're the cop on the radio. And I'm like, thanks for listening. I still got to take you to jail, but when you get out, keep listening, okay? Promise me you'll keep listening.
So let me ask you this question, Bobby. And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Bobby Ramos here on Your Palace, Your Place. I'm Sherry Marcucci. Bobby is coming to the Palace on February 6th to present his second act story. And if you're not familiar with the concept of second act, it's a chance for people to tell what they're doing in that second chapter of life. And often it's in inspiring stories, funny stories, and I think with Bobby, we're going to get a real mix of all of that and probably a whole lot more. But I want to ask,
this is at the Historic Theater in Waterbury.
What's that
side room called that I'm going to be in? What's that room called?
The Poli Club.
Oh, I love when you show off. That's right. That's what I'm going to be.
But I want you to show off for a minute because I want to know. Okay, so you're a policeman, right? How did you get into radio? How did that even happen? I mean, besides the fact that you have dulcet-toned voice, of course.
Well, you know what? And we'll get into that night because people don't believe my journey to the radio and where I came from as a kid. There's no way I was supposed to be on the radio, but we'll save that. It's what we call a teaser in the business.
Well, that's right.
I used to once in a while listening to sports talk radio, especially Mike and the Mad Dog, and they were the biggest guys in the country.
Yeah, them well. My husband was a huge fan.
Okay, they can be so arrogant and cut people off, especially one of them. And my best friend at the time, I approached him and blah, blah, blah. We went to the guy who was the superstar of the station in those days and his agent. We found out later it really wasn't his agent, but he couldn't get us in the door. And he called me probably 3 months down the road. I don't know why, but I can't get you guys an opportunity. So, Sherry, I just walked in. I just walked in to the lady who was second in charge. And she's a great woman, but everybody there was afraid of her because she was a tough chick.
Yeah.
And she didn't play no games. And everybody there was afraid of her. And I found her to be a teddy bear my years there with her. But she goes, well, you're going to need this, and you're going to need sponsors. And I had like 12 to 15 sponsors laminated. Well, you're going to need a format. And I brought that out of my bag, laminated. And there was something else she said, I can't remember right now. And she said, excuse me. And she got on I was only talking to her, Sherry, at that point, maybe 4 minutes. And she gets on the phone with her boss, the head of the station. And she goes, yeah, I got this guy. I really want him to get a show. I really want him to get a shot. He's really good. He's, you know, he's done a lot and blah, blah, blah. He has his voice. And she's going, uh-huh. Uh-huh. All right. No, I really would like him to start as soon as possible. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. So she goes, all right, thank you. Hangs up the phone. And she goes, here's how it started. She goes, I got you a 12-week trial period. Now, you know, Sherry, nothing works really in 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I said, all I said was thank you. Because this lady didn't know me, and she was basically lying to her boss. She didn't know me. She hadn't heard me on the radio. I didn't send her a tape because I didn't know about sending tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And as we got close over the years, I asked her. She said, Bobby, there was just something about you. You're your conviction, and I could tell what kind of heart you had. I knew you would work out.
Well, Bobby, let me tell you something. Years. I'm going to interrupt you because I want to I want to say I got that same feeling from you from your resume, and you had a picture with that resume, and I thought, this guy, he's interesting to me. He's done a lot of different things. And you said something, but you didn't explain it yet. But the fact that you and people listening won't believe this, but you actually were bypassed in grammar school by the nuns when it came time to read aloud because you had such a stuttering impediment. And so they just, so you wouldn't be embarrassed probably, they just bypassed you. So how did you go from being as verbose as you are and able to, you know, carry on a conversation with anybody and have a radio career, but from a kid who stuttered so badly? How did that happen?
The first thing, there was no money for treatment and all that kind of therapy kind of stuff. The first thing that really hit me, especially as a young boy, I couldn't answer the phone. And whenever the phone would ring, I'd run in the opposite direction. One summer day, my father was a carpenter, and the phone rang. I ran outside. He was outside working on his truck. He said, "Boy, go back in the house and answer the phone." I go and answer the phone, come back outside. He says, "Who was it?" I said, "Dad, I don't know. They hung up on me." And he said, "If people don't want to call my house and hear my son stutter, they don't have to call my damn house anymore. Now, go get me the toolkit." Now, it didn't stop my stuttering. It didn't make it go away. But for a young boy, for his father to say, in other words, "It's going to be all right. Don't worry about it. It's going to be okay." That stuck with me for a really long time. And as I got, the stuttering started leaving when I was 20, 21, and I learned to, I mean, I just did it twice when I was talking to you. I can almost tell which words are going to hem me up. I just did it there. So I will normally change the word really quick in my mind. Or once my voice got deeper, I learned to take in a little extra air and just blow right through it. Yeah,
That's great advice. If anybody's listening and has someone in their family, that to step back. I am going to have to wrap this segment up real quick, Bobby, with you. So I want to remind people.
What? I thought we had another 2 days.
We'll get
warmed up.
You're so funny. But I want to remind people, we're talking to Mr. Bobby Ramos from Bridgeport. Has a fascinating career. We haven't even touched the surface. He, in his second act, he's doing some amazing things, such as studying to become a professor, writing a memoir, and there's so much in between. Bobby, February 6th, you're going to come to the Palace Theater's Polite Club. You're going to just blow people away. I know you will with your presentation. And I so appreciate your enthusiasm and just, you know, your joy with life. And I think that's one of the things I want people to know about Second Act. We try to present people who really can share their joy of living. And Bobby, no question, you have that in all kinds of ways. So I'm just so thankful that you'll be here. If you're listening and would like tickets to Second Act and to hear Bobby Ramos, go to the Palace Theater's website, palacetheaterct.org, or call our box office at 203-346-2000. I need to take a break. Bobby, can't wait to meet you in person. And we'll be right back after these messages. Your palace, your place. I'm Sherry Marcucci, your host, for the next half hour. And this show today has just been, had so many pieces going, and I'm so excited. I am so excited to introduce to you the next two guests. First of all, the Palace Theater has a presentation coming up on March 15th, and it is the ballet Cinderella. And why this is so exciting is because of the connection locally. So we, in studio, I have Elizabeth Fisk Barriser from Brass City Ballet, in studio and on the line, and my heart is kind of pounding actually about this, and I hope I'm not embarrassing her, but we have Misty Copeland. And if you're not a ballet aficionado, you might not know who Misty is. So let me tell you, for those who might not know, Misty is an extraordinary ballerina and dancer. And she has done strides for young ladies that are brown and black like she is, and bringing them into the dance world. But she's also just extraordinary in so many ways. And the fact that Cinderella is coming to the Palace Theater has everything to do with her and the role that she has actually danced. So I want to welcome Elizabeth, but I want to start with Misty, who's on the phone with us this morning. First of all, good morning. Good morning, Misty.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me and for that lovely introduction.
Well, you know, I as I explained to your co-producer, who we'll talk about, Ekaterina Shalkanova from Open World Dance Foundation, I'm a dancer in my soul, and I was a little dancer, but I was also a little chubby dancer, so I was not somebody who ever was going to, you know, make dance a career, but it's such a way of communication. So enough about me. Let's talk about you, and first of all, the ballet Cinderella and your connection to it as a dancer and now as a producer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, the ballet, you know, doesn't really matter what ballet it is. Any opportunity I have to be a part of something where we're really reaching back, you know, connecting with communities and showing them the importance of the arts, the importance of arts education, the importance of dance, and kind of exposing not just your children, but also, you know, the parents, the caretakers, to, you know, I think such an important art form is why, you know, I do all of the things that I do. So, you know, having Ekaterina, like, you know, we've had a very long friendship, you know, since she danced at American Ballet Theater, where I'm still dancing. And, you know, her really finding this passion of giving back, you know, all that we've learned and experienced throughout our career. So this opportunity for young people to come and be a part of Cinderella is incredible. I wish I would have had something like that, where big stars were coming into, you know, local community and giving an opportunity for them to share the stage and understand all that goes into, you know, creating a performance and an experience. And so Isabella Boylston and James Whiteside, who are American Ballet Theater principal dancers, some of the biggest stars in classical ballet today, will be on the stage performing the leading roles. And I will be there to have a conversation with the audience before the show and really kind of share my journey, that I wouldn't have been given the opportunities that I have, you know, as a performer, if it weren't for someone, you know, opening a door for me and really, you know, seeing my talent for what it was and not about, you know, the circumstances or you know, background that I come from, and really seeing me as a person with real potential.
Well, and in the role actually of Cinderella, you danced.
You I did.
Yeah. And so I'm sure it has something, you know, a special nostalgia for you now to almost passing this torch, if you will.
Yes. I was fortunate enough, you know, the first time around that this production was presented through Open World Dance Foundation in Houston some years back now. And, you know, to be able to be, again, surrounded by, you know, hundreds of young kids that maybe have never even been on a stage before, all a part of this production. And I was Cinderella, and I was partnered by Calvin Royal III, who was a principal dancer with American Ballet Theater. And yes, now, you know, I feel like it's an opportunity, as you said, to be able to pass on the opportunity, not just, you know, to these dancers who will be performing the leads now, but pass on the opportunity to another community to experience something so unique and so special. And so I just want to encourage everyone to, either go out and audition, because we're taking everyone. we want everyone to experience this. It's not about your skill level. It's not about, whether or not you've been in a theater or seen a ballet, but let's get you, this exposure to this amazing art form and this opportunity to connect with other community members, that maybe you don't know and haven't met before.
This is extraordinary. And it's so important. I don't know if you know much about Waterbury, Connecticut, but we are an inner city and we have a high population of, people who wouldn't normally have this kind of an opportunity, children in particular. And so to be able to give them this chance to, and let's face it, whether it's dance, whether it's music, whether it's theater, it's all about telling a story and, letting feelings come to the fore, if you will, in a way that's not only beautiful to watch, but evokes an emotion out of people. And for the kids who are, particularly the kids, and I know some adults are going to audition as well, and we'll talk to Elizabeth about that, but I'm feeling something in my soul about that. Like I could weep almost, because what's going to happen to them and how they're going to be touched by this experience is just, it will change lives. It will change lives. So, and Elizabeth, I know you're sitting here patiently. And so Elizabeth Fisk Barrister, many of you in the greater Waterbury community know Elizabeth. She's been not only the founder, but the artistic director of Brass City Ballet for how many years now, Elizabeth?
I think this is our 38th year.
Oh, my goodness. And I've known you for probably most of those 38 years and worked with you in some capacity or another. You must have almost fell over when this came to be. Tell us a little bit from your end how you got involved in this whole thing.
Well, first of all, good morning, Misty. This is so exciting to be able to talk to you, and Sherry for having us on the air. And I love hearing you talk about this production, because it really, you speak about that community, and that is really what it's about. And my connection really started with my friendship with Yekaterina Shilkanova, who is an extraordinary woman. She understands the need for community involvement. She carries the legacy of classical ballet. She's an extraordinarily well-trained ballerina, graduate of the Vaganova Ballet Academy, Kirov School Ballet Company, ABT, and she has wants to basically bridge that seemingly unbridgeable gap between the professional classical ballet world and the audience, and she can do it. She is a community builder, and she can really do it. And I saw the video with you, Misty, from Houston, and I, as you said, Sherry, my eyes just welled up, because you see kids who've never been on the stage, and what she did to get those kids to stand so tall and proud. Misty, you saw that. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very emotional experience.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm feeling it before it's even come to fruition. Misty, how do you, as an educator and as a producer of this collaborative, how do you get that out of the children that will, everyone that's going to be working on this project?
Yeah, I mean, we all play a role. We all have our strengths and kind of bringing everyone together. And for me, I think it's really sharing my passion, sharing my experience, and being there, showing up, and saying I care, and getting people to come into the space, whether it's into the theater to see the production or to be a part of it. But the person who has the real skills behind getting that out of, the young people or the parents of Yekaterina. That's something that is a special talent that, not everyone has. Just because you are a performer on a big stage doesn't mean that you're going to really understand that that part of, you know, arts and dance education, and she really understands that, and she has just a really special gift in being able to really focus in and give everyone opportunity to feel like they are the only ones in the room. And that is, you know, is an incredible gift. And I've seen her at the end of those days. She is worn out because she gives every person everything that she has.
You know, Yekaterina talks about when she was a child and the inspiration that dance gave her. As a three-year-old, she went to see a classical ballet performance and said, that's what I want to do.
Oh.
She didn't say it. She's 3 years old. She's feeling like that is what I want to do. And this is the inspiration that all these adults and children can experience in this production of Cinderella by being a part of a community. And it really, that's the connection that we all want. We want that that connection that's beyond our phones and the computer. We want a real live experience.
If you're just tuning in, I just want to let you know we're speaking this morning with Elizabeth Fisk Barriser from Brass City Ballet and Misty Copeland from the Open World Dance Foundation, a former principal dancer for the American Ballet Theater. And they're talking about the upcoming production of Cinderella, the ballet Cinderella, that will be presented on the Palace Theater stage on March 15th. And we have an opportunity. This is, if you've been listening, you know this. If you're just tuning in, this is a real community project collaboration, and it's so exciting and will give opportunity to be a part of something extraordinary to not only children but adults. And there were auditions this past weekend, but there's another audition this weekend, correct, Elizabeth?
Absolutely, on Saturday and Sunday the 20th and 21st. And you can find that schedule at our website, www.brassityballet.org or openworlddancefoundation.org. And if you're three, ages 3 to 103.
I love that. I love that. And I mean, as I said earlier, dance is a way for people to, you know, get emotions out. And, you know, as someone who, you know, grew up as a dancer or with dance training, let me say it that way. I don't want to oversell that.
She is a dancer.
With dance training. What I got from it, and I was also involved in theater and still am, there is such a discipline you get and a work ethic that it's you know, one of the things working for the Palace Theater, one of the jokes kind of we all say inside is that, you know, trying to get people to support a not-for-profit arts organization is not easy because we don't have that cause, that somebody that makes somebody cry or, you know, touches necessarily them deep in their soul, like, you know, horrific things. And I won't get into that, but they're not seeing the full picture. And just as sports can, you know, help kids develop talents and skills, the arts so much. Is so necessary. Elizabeth, you see this as a teacher.
I do. And I, you know, Misty, I have to thank you because you really have thrown the doors of classical ballet wide open.
Yes.
And I see it because I see young girls of color coming in with hearts busting. And there is a place for everybody in this classical ballet world. And it seemingly has been so restricted, but I'm so happy that those doors, those barriers are being broken down. And I thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
It's funny because, you know, so many things are evolving, particularly, I would say, over the last decade in so many spheres. And our perception or our acceptance of what is called beauty and beautiful. And in dance, in classical dance for sure, there is, you know, a look. And, you know, many, I know you ladies can appreciate this. And I think we're seeing some sort of a evolution with that.
We are. It's slow, but we are.
Yeah.
And we just have to keep chipping away at it.
But Misty, what is your take on that? I mean, what do you see as, you know, for the future of dance? Do you, I mean, is that long, lean look is it going to make room for those who might be more curvaceous, for instance?
Yes, I think so. As Elizabeth said, it's slow changing. I think that's the ballet world in every aspect has kind of been that way, to change quite slowly. But I feel that, you know, with our understanding and knowledge of just, you know, taking care of ourselves health-wise, cross-training, you know, the different types of choreography that is now not just in more contemporary companies, but in all classical companies that do much more modern contemporary movement, it changes the way our bodies are shaped. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to have the strength, you need to have the muscles to be able to do certain types of movement. And so
sure.
I think that if you're your healthiest self and you're putting in the work, that, you know, it shouldn't matter what your body is shaped like. And I think that we're headed in that direction.
That's exactly what we do at Veracity Ballet. We say, treat your body, care for it, nurture it properly, and do the work, and nature will take care of it, the rest.
I think that's so important. And certainly not to lose your passion for something that you love, you know, and whether or not you're going to go on to a professional career, you don't need to leave that behind. And I see so many, even senior programs now are offering dance and,
absolutely,
you know, things of that nature, because first of all, it's healthy, your body's moving, and you want those muscles to have that muscle memory to remember, oh yeah, we can go in that direction and you know, move in ways that you know, are not only nice to look at, but help our body function for a long time to come, hopefully.
And I just want to say about the Cinderella production, you don't have to be a classical ballet trained dancer. We're children, adults, ballroom, musical theater, recreational dancers, tap dancers. If you love to dance, then please come and audition. We will be holding auditions in Connecticut on Saturday and Sunday. This Saturday and Sunday, the 20th and the 21st, at Veracity Ballet in Middlebury, Connecticut. And you can check the schedule by going to veracityballet.org or theopenworlddancefoundation.org to find out the exact schedule. There's another audition in New York. By the way, this is a big, broad community that we're reaching. Connecticut is only a small part. But I'm very excited, actually. I just found out this morning that Waterbury Arts Magnet School is going to participate.
Yay.
As the whole school.
That's fabulous.
As a dance department. That's grades 6 through 12. And talking to the dance chair there, Cheryl Worth, she was so excited. The principal is excited. And that's what it's about. It's about coming together as a community. So ballroom dancers, musical theater, recreational dancers, pre-professional, professional dancers, doesn't matter. If you want to be on stage with Isabella Boylston and James Whiteside, principal dancers with American Ballet Theater, if you want to see Misty Copeland in the flesh, I know I'm very excited to meet you, Misty.
Oh, me too.
Then please do come and audition. As she said, just come and audition.
Well, you know, I have spread the word a little bit myself, because we have an affiliation at the Palace with the Children's Community School. And so I let one of their teachers know, gave her all the information, and I know she's excited and is passing it on. I do hope, because they have a program there where they work with the Waterbury Symphony, and so this will be just an enormous, enormous opportunity for those children as well. If anybody's listening that's affiliated with Children's Community School, add your voice to getting some of these kids to the auditions this weekend at Veracity Ballet. And as Elizabeth said, you can go to their website, veracityballet.org, and get all the details, the time, and, you know, the directions, whatever, because this is, again, such an extraordinary opportunity. Misty, in we have a couple of minutes. What else that have we hit on, particularly about the Open World Dance Foundation? Is there anything else you'd like to add that, you know, I know you're speaking to on behalf of Ekaterina, so you know, who is the founder of the Open World Dance Foundation.
And Sherry, she regrets not being able to be here today. She really would wanted to come. She's in New York auditioning Joffrey Ballet
She texted me, and she's going to get a tape of this show. She really wants to hear it. And, I mean, she just sounds like she's extraordinary human being.
Yeah. You know, I don't work for the Open World Dance Foundation, but I, again, you know, have been friends with Ekaterina for a very long time, and her mission is really powerful. But, you know, also, and our missions are aligned, but, you know, to be able to take this production and use it as a means for each participant to have a chance to, you know, you've been talking a lot about it, but to nurture their discipline. And what that, you know, the sense of responsibility to foster friendships, to cultivate like the patience and the courage and to create lifelong memories within their communities is really what we want to do.
Well, I am blown away. I'm blown away that someone of your stature is coming to Waterbury, Connecticut, and and partnering and collaborating and along with Ekaterina Shcherbakova, right?
Shcherbakova.
I'm gonna get it right. And Elizabeth, you're a treasure that we have in our community as well. And you've been here for 38 years, and I know you personally, and I know your passion. I know, you know, how much it means to expose young people in particular, but people of all ages.
Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you. It really is about sharing, and that's what the arts is about. It's about expression and sharing. And if you don't have a passion, if you don't have a love for it, it's not the right business for you.
Yeah, that's, well, they say that about theater too, because you do. You absolutely, there's a lot of ups and downs and things you don't anticipate, and like pandemics that throw everybody's world upside down. But anyway, well, I want to just thank both of you for, you know, your time this morning and helping, you know, being here to get the word out, because if you miss this opportunity to be a part of this, and again, it's not just as, what did you say, from 3 to 103? Come and audition. And I know somebody, a former dance colleague of yours from Hartford Ballet?
Yes.
Okay. Is going to Crystal Meyer. She sent me a picture I'm going to show you when we get off
of
you back when you were probably 21 years old. But she's thinking of coming to audition. So, I mean, you know, it's a great opportunity, a wonderful project. And I want to thank you both for being here with us this morning.